It's always a privilege to be here in Marysville. The first time I came here was in 1976. I came as part of a singing group. I don't do that anymore. And then the first time Bella came was in, I think, 1980. So it's always a privilege to be able to come here and to see old faces, see familiar faces. There are no old faces out there. Actually, there are a couple, but one of them's up here, too, unfortunately. What I thought I'd do, so you can see my wife, is I thought we could sing a song. It's very short, and it's in the language that we're ministering in, which is Sakado. And so kill two birds with one stone, sort of. You get to see my wife. And you'll hear a little bit of the Sakata language. So what do you want to start?
You start.
Sa tingi tingi e langi, lobi tingi kase Jesus ku, sa lua lua ne laut, lobi lua kase Jesus ku, sa panchi panchi su anang, Lobe panchi kase Jesus ku. Kase Jesus, oh kase Jesus, neng ala samua ne. Kase Jesus, oh kase Jesus, neng ala samua ne. Thank you. Okay, well, because the scripture tells me I'm supposed to do this, I'll tell you what this means. Lest you think I was singing something terrible. As high as the heavens, the love of Jesus is higher. As wide as the ocean, the love of Jesus is wider. As beautiful as a rainbow. English, Paul. The beauty of a rainbow, the beauty of Jesus surpasses that. And then it's the love of Jesus, oh, the love of Jesus that overcomes everything. The love of Jesus, the love of Jesus that overcomes everything. So that's what that song is. Among the other things, I don't really mention this too often, but if you're going to have a church, it's nice if you can sing. And so most of the songs in Sakado, we had to translate. A few of them they did. So what I thought I'd do tonight, and I don't know how many, some of you are those familiar faces, have been aware of what we're doing for years, and some of you maybe not. So what I thought I'd do is take us through a history of some of the things that we've been doing for the last, whatever it's been, 38 years or so. This is supposed to work, and we'll see if it does. I don't want to be turning around all the time. That's what we looked like in 1980. When we came through here, we had two children. And we went to the mission field on our daughter's second birthday. My father was extremely angry with me for years. Well, until he died, pretty much. Not a believer. And we took his grandchildren away from him. So, and I don't suppose it helped that we took her on her birthday. But, yeah. Did it go forward? No. There. Good. I'm probably going to have to be doing that. We went to Indonesia in 1980. The first thing we did was study the Indonesian language. After studying the Indonesian language, about a year, a little over a year, we moved interior into the tribe called Garai. At that point, then, we started language and culture study again. You can see my wife hasn't changed at all. It took us about 2.5 years to learn the Garai language, and no, it was not written when we first went in, so we had to do that. We had partners. We had two other families were with us back in those days. One of them left after about 5 years, but so we weren't doing everything by ourselves. After the first 2.5 years, it might just be easier for me. Are you willing to go ahead and flip? Because I can, rather than turning around every time. Then I'm just going to trust you. Okay. After 2.5 years, the three of us, the three men, began teaching in Gerai. The Gerai people were an animistic people. They had heard of God. The Catholics had been in there, so they'd heard of Jesus Christ. They did not understand the gospel. They did not really understand anything about God. They had concepts like sin, but they were wrong concepts. Some things that, for instance, lying is not a sin, but killing a deer was. So their ideas about God, their ideas about man, their understanding of reality was very warped and very wrong. So we decided that we would, you can go to the next slide. We decided that we would teach using what we're calling now the chronological approach to evangelism, starting in the book of Genesis and teaching stories beginning with creation, of course, but through the Old Testament, not every story, but highlighting God's nature and His character, that God's omniscient, that God's that He's all-powerful, He's loving, the fact that when man was created, that he right away rebelled against God, and that even at that point, God already knew what He was going to do. One of my granddaughters was reciting a verse the other day, and she was reciting it from a translation that it said, I don't know what it says in the translations I'm used to, but it said something about how we couldn't be justified through the law, so God came up with a different plan. Well, that's not what happened. God didn't come up with a different, well, you know what, that didn't work. I'm going to come up with a different plan. So we see God's promise right at the very time when man sinned. And then as we go along, we see man's characteristics that he is, you can go to the next one. I'm still going to have to turn on because I don't know which the next one is. No, go to the last one. Okay. that man is always sinful, always rebellious, that he has no capability to help himself. That, you know, it's an amazing story, the giving of the Ten Commandments. Moses came down with the Ten Commandments, and he passed them on to the Israelites. And with a resounding yes, they said they wanted to keep the law, and they would be God's special people. And Moses went back up to the mountain again. And while he's gone, they made a golden calf and broke pretty much all of the Ten Commandments. And that's just the way we are. And we like to think, oh, yeah, those terrible Jewish people, they were really terrible. You know, Abel back then, oh, he was really terrible. And the people in Noah's day, oh, they were really terrible. But it's us. We're the ones who are really terrible, all of us. So as you go through the stories, the Gerai began to see that they were sinners, that they had no hope in themselves to be accepted by God. So then when we got to Jesus, we presented him as God's answer, as the Messiah, as God himself come down to help us. And at that point, then we didn't ask for a show of hands. That doesn't work in an Asian culture. If you ask for a show of hands, either everyone raises their hands or nobody does. They don't do. In America, we're all about being independent, but in Asia, they're not. So, in talking to people, about 300 of them made a profession of faith at that point. So then we began. You can go to the next slide now. We began teaching and discipling our partners. As I mentioned, one of our partners left at that point. They left because they really couldn't, they just didn't get the language. Our other partners did the translation. They are, in fact, she's in charge of our translation program in our mission. They're very good translators. Bella and I worked on discipleship and curriculum development. We ran a children's program. We did, I don't want to say everything else because it sounds like, but we did most of the ministry things while they concentrated on the translation. Okay, the next one. In 1997, the translation was finished and given to the Gerai people. That's actually what that's a picture of there. In 1994, we ordained elders who function as the leadership of the church. And it was after that, it was actually 1996, that we left feeling like they didn't need us. Not only did they not need us anymore, we would probably be a hindrance if we continued to stay. So the next slide then. And the next slide. That's one of the elders in Gerai. The next slide. There we go. Good. So we left the Gerai Church in the hands of the leadership there, and we've gone back and visited. We visited not that long ago. They're doing pretty well, and they're continuing to do outreach. They're continuing to minister to their needs. They tore down the building that we had built and built another building that's neither here nor there. But I mean, they're functioning, they're ministering, and they seem to be doing pretty well. We prayed at that point and asked the Lord, could we go somewhere else and do it again? So it wasn't immediately, but go to the next slide, please. The Lord did lead us to, let's see which slide that is. Yes. There was a church in among the Sakata people in a village called Porobut. People had been ministering to them itinerantly, but they'd been ministering to them in not in their own language, not even in Indonesian. They'd been ministering to them in another tribal language, which they didn't really understand. So they asked, could we send missionaries so that we could translate the Bible, so we could disciple them, so we could teach them how to do outreach? But the truth is, when we got there, I don't know that many of them really knew the Lord. They had got the whole law concept down, and when I'd heard them speak, because somebody would speak on Sunday morning, they would talk about how they basically just tell everybody they had to keep the law. So we did the same thing we did in Gerai. The next slide, please. Porobut. That's what that looks like over there when you're flying over it. A lot of jungle. I think that's what it used to look like. So the next slide then. And this is the village of Porobut, I hope. And the next slide. We went in with the team. One of the things as we prayed to the Lord and asked Him was that we could be part of a team. I didn't want to have to do it myself. And I also asked that I wouldn't have to be the leader of the team. Not that I mind leading, but I didn't want to because we had done it before, everybody to just do whatever we told them. I kind of wanted to be able to work cooperatively. This is part of the team that we had back in the day. The one on the right and his wife, those were from our first tribe in Gerai. When we told them we wanted to move to Sakato, they told us, well, the Lord's been working in our heart and our hearts, and we'd like to join you there. And then there's a Korean couple, and then us. At one point, we had German partners, and we also had two single girls, one of whom was our daughter. But the next slide. This is the team that remains of the team. Everybody, you know, I always feel like I have to say this, lest people think that we drove them out or something. They just can't get along with anybody. The first German family that left because of illness. The second German family left because of their children's schooling. The Korean family left because of their children's schooling. The tribal family left because he fell into sin. And the two single girls left. One of them left to get married, and the other one just left for other reasons. So it wasn't, none of it was. We actually got along pretty well. We'd spend time together each week praying and trying to be an encouragement to each other. So it wasn't that. So the next slide. So what we're involved in now is we're involved in evangelism and discipleship. We still do go, Bella and I still travel to another village, but we're basically, we don't do anything or very little that we do without bringing somebody with us. So, could you, next slide. So we're discipling men. Well, this is what I'm doing primarily. These are some of the men that come, they show up each week, and we spend several hours together. I see them during the week as well. But there's actually, for a fairly small village, there's quite a few of them that come. And they are ministering. Some of them are ministering as deacons. Some of them are ministering as elders, although they've not been appointed yet. Next slide, please. We're discipling them for leadership, obviously, for leadership so that we can leave and leave the church in the hands of godly leaders. Bear with me a second. I'm doing this all wrong. Not the whole presentation, but I'm trying to look at it on my computer, and it's just easier. And I have to remember to tell him to switch the slides so that I'm looking at the same slide he's looking at. Next slide. We're also training them to do outreach. Actually, they know how to do the outreach. They've done it on their own now for a while. They go to villages without us. So this has worked out pretty well. Next slide, please. And we're training people so that the church will continue to grow, and not just grow in numbers, but grow in grace and knowledge of the Lord, growing in, as Ephesians says, you know, that each part is supplying what the other ones need so that they can grow and mature in the Lord. That's our goal. That's our goal with the church. This is, as I talk about, I don't do anything by myself anymore. This, of course, is a baptism. And you can see I've got the tribal guys baptizing, and I'm actually just standing by, lending weight to the ceremony, I guess. You can take that any way you like. I do weigh about twice what they weigh. Bella has been involved in discipling women. My wife is my partner. She's not a housewife. Well, she is a housewife, but she's not just a housewife over there taking care of things so that I can minister. She's very much a part of the ministry there, and she ministers to the women. I probably didn't say next slide, did I? I didn't. Next slide. Okay, so she's involved in discipling women. And the next slide, please. She's training them in ministry. Right now, they've taken over the Sunday school program. They've taken on the Sunday school program. It wasn't a coup. So they are involved in ministry. They help with the children's program. The women, actually, I would have to say, like most churches, the women seem to have more of a desire to walk with the Lord than the men do. That's not to say the men don't. But it seems to be easier to get the women to help with things sometimes than it does with the men. The next slide is just a group of women that, and actually one of our old partners is also, that's the blonde-haired one in the top. She was the one who left and got married. She married another missionary and worked in South America. Okay, next slide. We also have a children's ministry. Bella Bella helps with that, and we've been training the people there to help with that. This is just a special number at the church, but they memorize scripture. They have to fill in books and answer questions, and the kids really like that. By the way, next slide. This is extremely popular. This is a culture where they don't really have a lot going on. You know, there's no little league, there's no ballet, there's no nothing like that, right? So we are one of the only organized things for the kids to do. So sometimes the parents won't come to church. And because they're out in their rice fields, they're a long ways away, and then we'll see them riding their kids home because the kids' club is in the afternoon on Sundays, riding their kids home because their kids insisted that they had to be brought back to make it to kids' club. So I wish their parents were as excited about things as they are. But this is an extremely popular thing. The kids really love it. And we give them shirts when they win awards and that kind of thing too, and they like that too. Okay, the next slide. Right, we play games. Next slide. My wife is also involved in literacy. She's taught literacy to adults. Primarily, she teaches it to the children now because the adults, the ones that wanted to learn to read and write, already have. And so she's training the children. You say, well, why don't they go to school? Yes, they do. But oftentimes the school system is not very good. It's not very good. What can I say? So we've seen third graders, fourth graders who couldn't read or write. And what happens is they just drop out of school. The teachers don't know how to teach them, and the kids aren't picking it up on their own. So my wife teaches the children how to read and write, and the kids in the kids club, they all eventually learn to read and write. I don't know any of them that didn't. So next slide is my wife. Back before she was gray. Probably. The next slide. And like I said, we don't do anything without training them to do it along with us. So she's helped some other people to learn how to do literacy with the kids. Okay, next slide. We're also, Pastor mentioned, we're involved in translation. Well, before I went back last time, in fact, the last time I talked to you, I know I would have said this because it's what I was thinking, that I was going to be involved primarily in translation, and I was going to back off of some of the other things that I was doing. Well, that didn't work. It didn't work because the guys weren't going to let me back off of making lessons and teaching them and discipling them. So they basically just said, no, you have to keep doing that. And what do you say? So I thought, I don't know how to do this. how am I supposed to do translation and make lessons and do discipleship and do everything else? I just didn't know. And I still don't know. The Lord's just extremely gracious. And this is really the truth. Listen to what I'm saying, because this is true. This isn't me up here being modest, okay? I don't know how it happened. I don't know how God did it, but we were able to just keep working day to day and see everything get done. And it was just the Lord. And I know some of you are still thinking, oh, no, he's a wonderful guy. No, I'm not a wonderful guy. And I didn't think that this was possible to do. And so if it's happening, it's God. It's not me. I mentioned this morning, if you were there this morning, you heard how we do this. It's kind of a process. It's not kind of a process. It's a process we go through to try and get the translation so that it's understandable in their language, so that it's God's word in the Staccato language. And this is an anecdote that doesn't belong in here. I was invited to come down and speak to a church that was down the hill from us. It's actually another denomination. It's another group. The pastor doesn't know the Lord. I doubt if anyone that goes to that church knows the Lord. So they speak to them, they teach them in Indonesian, which the people really don't understand that well. Some of them get some of it. So I went down, and the folks where we're at were telling me, well, this is what it's going to be like when you go down. There'll probably be about 100 people maybe on Saturday night, and then on Sunday morning there might be 200 people, and they're going to talk, and they're going to visit, and they're not going to pay attention, and it's, you know, just so you know. So I went, okay, that's what it is. So I went down, and Saturday night there was about 200 people. There are not 100. And they sat there in rapt silence and listened to me and reacted when I spoke, because I was speaking in Staccato. And that was their language. It was the first time most of them had ever heard God's word in their own language. And, not so coincidentally, they also heard the gospel. And they heard it the next day, too. So the next day, church, and the church was completely packed, and they all sat there and listened. And you know, like I say, they laughed when they were supposed to laugh. They reacted when they were supposed to react. It was amazing. I thought, well, this isn't anything like. And the big difference from what I could see was they were hearing it in their own language, most of them for the first time. And I thought, wow, what a privilege it is for us to be able to hear it in our own language. A lot of people, that's not happening. All right, next slide. Oh, we're... Keep going. I was advancing slides and you were not, and that's my fault. Keep going. To the Bible where it says... Next one. That was a Bible check, by the way. So 55%. In the 3 years that I realized that we were going to have to, Bella and I were going to have to do the translation, we just started in and started working, and I really like it. It's I wouldn't call it fun, but it's part of it. I just really enjoy it. So it's not like, oh, boy, this is terrible. So I enjoy it, and I enjoy making progress. I enjoy being able to spend time studying the Word and trying to figure out what it says. Most of the time I know what it says, but at times things that I didn't really understand before, I'm having to figure out what they mean now. I can't just say, well, I'll, you know, that doesn't matter, because I have to translate it. So anyway, we managed during the last three years, to translate 55% of the New Testament, which if you had told me we were going to do that, I would have said no way. And so we're looking to go back now, and in the next 3 years, we're hoping to finish the New Testament, and then we'll probably come on a home assignment and then go back and not finish the Old Testament, but finish the Old Testament portions and passages that we'd like to see in the language. So that's all God. And they checked pretty well, so because our first check with the translator, I didn't know how it was going to go, so I'm asking him how it's going to. He says, well, you know, we shoot for about, 100 verses a day. And then he told me horror stories, you know, well, you know, this one place I went, we got 2 verses done the first day. And, you know, we had, I think, at that time, I think we had 1,100 verses we needed to translate. So, no, that was 1,500 that first check. It was a brutal check. 1,500 verses. So we had 15 days of checking to do. So it actually went pretty well. And the people were understanding it. It went right along. And we actually were able to do a lot more than 100 verses a day. So apparently they're understanding it, which is the goal. The next slide, please. All the teaching. Somebody asked me this today. Everything we do is in their language. Because like I just told you, with the people down the hill, they're not getting it in their language and they're not understanding it. And we ask you, do you think there's much point in sharing the Word of God if people aren't understanding it? I mean, it's still the Word of God, but they're not understanding it. So we, from day one in ministry, I have never taught in Indonesian in Sikkado area. I speak in Sikkado. All the teaching, all the lessons I make are in Sikkado. Everything we do is in Sikkado. All the literacy materials, my wife is continuing to turn out or produce more literacy material, not just like primers, but books. I don't know how many, where is she anyway? Are you? Oh, there you go. She had to take some pain meds, actually. She was told that that in order for the people to know to learn to read well, they have to have more than just the Bible to read. So she's been producing books, basically, and doing those in the Sikkado language. Oh, this does not make my heart sing to have to do this stuff. But we do social development, and it's not our primary goal to do that. The government likes it, and we like the government to give us permission to continue to stay there. So we try to keep them happy. So we've been, I'm not saying next slide, am I? Next slide. This is a path between us and the village down the hill, and it's actually pretty brutal to get down there. We no longer have a flight program, so Bella and I have to go out walk out or ride motorcycle out, and the road's brutal. So this is social development, but we had a kind of ulterior motive in having them do this. We're making like a sidewalk as far as we can on the worst spots of this road. And so they're happy about that. Next slide, please. And we don't have to pay them labor to do that. We just buy the cement for them. Next slide. This is actually our bathroom, because I didn't get any pictures of their bathrooms. But we heard that the government was encouraging them to all have bathrooms. They just normally would use the river or the woods to do their business. So when we heard that, we thought, well, maybe we could be a help. So we actually bought toilets for everybody in the village. And for some of them, we actually gave them the money to make the whole bathroom. And the government was very thrilled with that. We actually had, as it turns out, they came and they made this announcement in church. The government wants us to put bathrooms in every house, I thought. And so we heard this and thought, oh, I guess it must be something the government's doing. Well, it turns out the government has been doing this for years and years and years. It's just no one's been listening to them. But they made the announcement in our village, and we thought, well, let's try and help them. So there's a bathroom in every house in our village now. And when the government heard that there was a village that had a bathroom in every house, they couldn't believe it. So they sent all these people from the Department of Health and Welfare up and had this big ceremony, and I tried to look inconspicuous in the back, but it didn't really work. And you want them to know we're helping, because that helps us to get our visas, but I would prefer to, I really do believe the whole, you know, not letting the left hand know what the right hand's doing. The next picture, the last project that we're doing right now, we're due to start it when we get back, is a clean water project to bring water down into the village. This is quite a ways uphill. It's a creek, and we will try and pipe the water down. So it's just what we do. It's one of the things we have to do. It's not something that I actually would prefer if somebody else would do it. But it's not what we went there for, but we end up doing it. And this is interesting, and maybe not so interesting. Maybe you guys would understand this, but whenever we put out a request for money for any kind of a social project, money just pours in, you know, and we use it for what it's supposed to, just so you don't think we're asking for things just to supplement our support. But I just find it really interesting that for supporting evangelism, supporting discipleship, Bible translation, people are like, you know. But if you say, we want a clean water project, so we have plenty of money for the clean water project. Next slide, please. So these are our prayer requests as we go back. There would be other prayer requests if we were talking about what we're doing right now on home assignment. But we want to be able to finish the translation project. We're very aware that we're getting older and that things are tenuous. Things are always tenuous, but I think it's just that we're aware of it now. But we'd like to be able to have the health to finish the translation project. By the way, God is all about finishing things. I don't know if you realize that. You know, I don't know what his plan is, and I don't know that we're going to be able to, but I pray with real confidence when I ask the Lord to let us finish it, knowing that that's the kind of thing that's on his heart, finishing things. that the Sakkara believers will work to keep the unity of the Spirit. In the past, when we've been gone, there tends to be, it's a small community, they tend to fight along family lines, and we just want them to begin to function as a body. And then number three, that the Lord will raise up leadership from among the Sakkara people. Right before we left, we had four elder candidates, and about 2 weeks before we left, three of them got knocked out, and not like knocked out permanently, but had some major problems that we actually, it was nice enough, I'm sure the devil wasn't being nice, but it was nice enough that he allowed us about 3 weeks to actually be able to work through this. So this didn't all come to light the day before we left or something. So we were able to work through, and some of the things were handled before we left, but these guys just need to mature in the Lord. And then that the Lord will give us the health and strength to do the things that need to be done. So those are our prayer requests as we go back. We do so much appreciate your prayers. I appreciated the message this morning. I believe that the Lord delights in our prayers, and I think that our prayers move the Lord. And I have seen the Lord provide so many things, and I'm not talking about material things necessarily, but to do so many things on our behalf because people were praying. And so we very much appreciate your prayers for us. Did I? Yeah, oh good, I'm on the right slide. I'm on the same slide as you. So thank you, and I'm sorry for any confusion. It was all my fault. So sorry. I'm done. Do I?
Questions.
Oh, questions. Does anyone have a question?
No, we have a question.
I answered them all. No questions. Okay. Yes? Yes, there is. A few years back, I probably mentioned in a prayer letter, but a few years back, a congressman publicly accused our team of trading in uranium and in gold. It was printed in a paper, the accusation was made, the police came in. That was fun. That's sarcasm. It wasn't fun at all. And then we had to try and explain to police what we were doing in there, and these people have... They are spiritually just blind as bats. So I'm showing them all this stuff I do, and they're just not getting it, you know. So, yes, there's an active opposition, and this is not the first time that sort of thing has happened. We've been ordered out of our tribe, by a Muslim person. But the government, by and large, is supportive of what we're doing. So there's individuals within the government who are Muslim and fairly fanatic, and they would love to see us gone. So whenever anything happens politically, for instance, when the United States decided to, maybe I'll get this wrong in how I said it, I can't remember, acknowledge the, move the embassy to Jerusalem, that's what it was. There were demonstrations in the city, but not where we live. Our people... They're not Muslims, and they don't really care that much. Someone asked me today, because Indonesia is, officially it's supposed to be like 90% Muslim, but it's not. It's about 75% Muslim, but it's been very embarrassing for them to acknowledge that number has been rolling back through the years. So they stick with the old number, 90, but it's not 90. It's about 75% are Muslim. Yes? Well, that's why we're training other guys, because it doesn't work if you're the one guy. As best we can tell, there's maybe 15,000 to 20,000 Sakkara-speaking people. They go all the way down, which this is meaningless to you, but they go all the way down. We are upriver. We are among the upriver Sakkara people. We are in the headwaters, the very small rivers that eventually flow into the Sakkara River, which eventually flows into the Kapuas River, which is the largest river in Indonesia. So all along that Sakkara River are Sakkara-speaking people. We work with the upriver Sakkara people. The language is the same, but we're targeting an area that you could walk in 2 hours, and it kind of spokes out from the village that we live in. About, we guess, I'm really terrible with numbers, by the way, with estimations and stuff, but we guess about 2,000 people are on the upriver thing. Upriver Sakkara area. But like I said, we're discipling people partly so that they will you know, I'm not thinking I'm the guy that's got to reach the Sagado people, you know, so. Oh, sure. Hi.
You mentioned that their services on Saturday night and Sunday morning. Is there a reason for doing the Saturday night instead of Sunday night or something like that?
Yeah, because I didn't set the schedule. The first tribe we went to was Sunday morning and Sunday night because that's what I was used to, and they didn't know any better. But I told you there was a church there before we got there, and they had services Saturday night. Actually, they call Saturday night, what would it be in English? Malamingu. Night of Sunday. It's night of Sunday being the next day. So it's actually, if you want to think about it like that, it's Sunday night. So they're a little bit like the Jewish people in that sense, that they think of the day starting the night before. Yes?
Yeah, a lot of your slides show younger families. Is there older people as well there?
You don't know how many witty remarks I just repressed. sure. Yeah, there's older people. In fact, we just lost the village we live in hasn't been there all that long, maybe 45 years. And the two men who moved there with their families, others have moved there since, but they just recently died. Both of them believers. Both of them, I didn't realize how much influence they wielded in keeping everybody in line. When they left, you know, well, Grandpa's dead now. We can do what we want. So there's been a lot more bickering and fighting. So, yeah, there are older people. They were probably... you can't go by what they say because they lose all track of that and they'll give you all these ridiculous... Like, Grandpa was 112. You know, no, he wasn't. He was probably my father's age, which, based on the fact that his son is my age, his oldest son, so he was probably in his 80s when he died. So, yeah, there are older people there.
What are some of the joys and some of the trials of ministering in that culture?
Well... you know, it's an interesting thing. One thing that they don't do there is, and it's not just to me, to anybody, they don't really compliment each other very much, and they don't say thank you naturally. I mean, they'll say thank you now if I give them something, you know, hand them something. So nobody ever says after the service, boy, that was really great. You know, when you talked about Ephesians there, I thought about that. You don't get any of that. You don't get any of that. It's a little hard to just keep working and working and working. And the first tribe we went to, the Garai tribe, I told you our partners were very good translators, and the Garai Bible is a very good Bible. And I'm an adequate teacher. My children think I'm a good teacher, though. So my daughter says, Dad, do the people here realize that they've got maybe the best translator in our mission and one of our best teachers? I said, no. How could they? They, you know, this is what they have. They don't have anything to compare it to. So that can be a little bit hard. The biggest joy we have, and this is the truth, the thing that recharges our battery is the kids program. Because they are so enthusiastic. And they're memorizing verses. They're just a lot of fun to be around. They sing with abandon. And we found this in Garai as well. But what you're doing is you're training the next generation. So we're seeing now the teen group is really doing well for the first time ever, because they used to be the kids. Now they're the teens, and they've been baptized. They've made professions of faith. They've been baptized. They're doing well. So that. There's a lot of things that bring joy, but that's actually one that you know, after Sunday morning, I'm exhausted and I drag myself to the kids' meeting, and after the kids' meeting, I feel great. So I don't guess the exhaustion is all physical. So.
How's the divorce rate?
Very low. Very, very low. They just, they really, in our tribe at least, they don't really get divorced a lot. I can't even think of anybody who's been divorced. Yeah. Yeah, so they've got one on Americans in that regard. In Garai, when we went in there, it was a very different system. They would and I'm not even sure how I would categorize this, but they would marry somebody, but they would pay everything is how would you say, made, boy, my English is bad. When you start thinking, and you're thinking in terms of their language, and suddenly now you got to put it in English, and you're going, wait a minute, I said this. They would have to, like, when they get married, they would have to put out a pig for people to eat, and maybe rice wine and all that. And that is what would, what would you call it? Not sanctify, but it would make, formalize it. Okay. So they would decide, a guy and a girl would decide to get together. It'd be very, very low-key, and very, very little is put out, maybe a very small pig and this and that. A very small ceremony. And it was kind of a trial period. And they would try it, and if it worked out sometime later, then they would throw this huge party. And that would actually raise all the levels of the fines that would take place if there was adultery and all that. So, but before that was done, it was very easy to divorce. So when we went into Garay, most of the adults had been married at that lower level 2 and 3 times. But then when they finally found somebody they were compatible with, they would stay married for, then divorce was really looked down on. Once they paid that, put out all the higher, had the bigger party or whatever, then they didn't get divorced. So that was different. But in Sicado, where we're at now, they don't do that. They didn't do that before we got there, and they stay married. So that's one good thing. And I'd like to say they don't fight, but that would be a lie. They have the same problems that we have. Marriage ceremonies in the church. Yes, there have. Not as many as I would like to see. On one hand, I don't mind so much because I have to do them. And anyhow, I didn't go there to marry people, but I do it. And it's always encouraging to me anyway. But it's easier to get married local law-wise without having to mess with the church. You don't have to put out very much. It's low-key. They're not expecting anything. Where we expect them to not sleep together, we expect a few things, and so for whatever reason, there haven't been as many as I'd like to see. We just hear, oh, so and so are getting married. Oftentimes, it's because a believer or a professing believer is marrying an unbeliever, and we won't marry him in that circumstance. So. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. We have both husband, wife, teaching, counseling things where you spend quite a few, usually evenings with them. But we also have premarital counseling. And that's another reason that they don't like it, because they're going to have to show up for 8 or 10 sessions and listen to the Word of God. And they're just, they want to get married in 2 weeks. They don't want to wait 8 weeks. The last one, that was exactly what it was. If one of us is an unbeliever, what we tell them is, we can't marry you, but we're willing to study with you. And then we just go through the chronological approach to evangelism. And then in one case, I remember where we did that, and we're not making any promises. We're not telling them you're going to get married at this point in time. We'll just study. We'll see how it goes. And when we got done, the girl was from a church family, and the guy was not. But by the time I was done studying, I had a lot more confidence that the boy knew the Lord than the girl did. I'd ask her a question, and she'd just look at me like I was crazy, and he would laugh and answer the question. So I'm not sure if she knows the Lord. She was a professing believer, but I don't really know. But I have real confidence he understood the gospel by the time it was done. So.
Explain the translation process. Who does the checking?
Okay, the translation process starts. I do the exegesis, which is I'm going in, I'm looking to see what it says, and putting that in a rough draft in Sicado. Then I meet with a man, and I've used different people. You're trying to find people who are good at it. And we go over the vocabulary, we go over idioms, we go over how I say things. And then after that, I make changes to it. Then I meet with another person and do a recording check where I will read a small portion, and then he will repeat it. And the theory is that people will not repeat back bad language in their own native language. If somebody were to say to me, I have a hard time thinking bad English on my feet, but if somebody were to say, You know, we ins go to the store, and I have to repeat that. I'm not going to say we ins go to the store. I'm going to say we go to the store. And that's the theory. So anyway, I work with him. I record that. I make changes. Then I give it to Bella. Bella does comprehension checks. She takes the material I've given her. She looks it over. She makes questions up ahead of time so that she can find out if they're understanding it. Some of them are pretty straightforward. If there are things like who's talking, what's he saying, if it's a narrative, are they going somewhere? Who's going? If it's stated in there, why are they going? You're trying to see if it's communicating to them. And so she does that with three different people, and each of them has their own strengths, and she changes it, you know, a little bit each time. If there's a major problem where they're not understanding something they should be understanding, then she brings it back to me and says, they're not getting this, Paul. And I'll very, very nicely say, oh, they're not getting it. Huh? So, anyway, we'll usually have a discussion about that, and especially if, because usually what she does is she comes and says, this has to change to this. And I listen to that, and sometimes I say, oh, and sometimes I go, no. Because some of their changes are not because they don't understand it. It's because they don't agree with it. So at that point, then, we consider that not finished, but ready to be checked. But what I have to do then is I have to take that whole thing, and I have to make a back-to-English translation. So I'm taking the Sukkot out, and I'm actually doing this now on home assignment for the Book of John. And sentence by sentence, I'm taking it and putting it back into English. And I send that to the translation checker, who our translation checker does not live in the States. He goes through that, and he looks for things like consistency. Am I using the same word for the same Greek words? Or am I using different words? If I am, why am I doing that? He's looking for content. Did I leave something out? He's looking for a lot of things, honestly. The notes and questions, for instance, on the book of Mark, I think it was probably 30 or 40 pages of notes and questions for me. It's a lot of work to go through that, but it's such a help. And sometimes he's challenging my exegesis. He's saying, why did you translate this way? And I will. And if I can come back to him and say, this is why I translated it this way, then he's fine. He's not trying to make me translate what he thinks I should, but he's want to make sure that I've done the work. Then.
So he's mastered the language?
No. That's why it's back to English.
Okay.
Yeah. He's looking at an English translation of a literal English translation of the Sukkot. And yeah. So then he shows up eventually after he gets my answers to his notes and questions. He then shows up, and we have to arrange translation helpers, the native language helpers. We usually have two at a time. We don't work with them any more than 3 days in a row because it's grueling. And then I read a passage. The translator, the checker will say to me, read Mark 6, 1 through 5. So I read Mark 6, 1 through 5 in Staccato, and then the native language helpers will repeat it back in their own language. Bella then translates what they say to the checker who doesn't speak Staccato. And he's listening and making notes. Is it all there? Are they understanding what's there? Are they leaving things out? Are they clear? Is it confusing? Then he will ask questions. She will translate the questions into Staccato. Then she will translate the answers back to him in English. And I'll just sit there sleeping. Kind of. No, I have other things to do. And then if there is a problem where he will say something like, you know, if they just left out, if it says that that, for instance, and I don't know that it actually says this, but where Peter and John run to the tomb, and it says Peter and John run to the tomb, and they say Peter ran to the tomb. You want to know, well, why did they leave John out? Did I do something wrong? Is this, did I put that the wrong place in the sentence? Why? And a lot of times it's because they just forgot, and so you read it again and say who went, and then they give it to both the guys, and you go, oh, okay, it's not confusing. They just, because how many of us, you know, could recite verbatim something we just heard? So if that's all it is, if it's a memory problem, that's not a problem. But there have been times where it's there, it's clear to me because I know what it's supposed to be saying, and we'll ask them, and they won't give it back to us, and they won't give it back to us, and we ask them, and they won't give it back to us. So obviously, it's not put in a natural enough way in Staccato for him to understand what it is. It's makes clear to me because I'm not a native Staccato speaker, and I know what the verse is supposed to say. So then I have to actually sit there and figure out, well, why is this? And sometimes it's like I say, the sentences aren't formed the same way as they are in English or in Greek, for that matter. So sometimes I have to reorder things. Sometimes, yeah, but the goal is so that what God said, that they're understanding that, so that they're not confused about that. Yeah, I know. This is actually a really thorny thing in translation. The meaning based versus form based. Form based would be to translate it as literally as you possibly can. Meaning based is to say, well, just figure out what it means and translate it that way. We're kind of in the middle somewhere. Our mission actually, well, that's not fair. One person in our mission has really been pushing us toward meaning based, and I feel like they pushed too far. So we're yeah. So we're kind of in the middle of that someplace.
Does that put pressure on you?
That person doesn't put pressure on me, no. And that's the nice thing about working interior, is that I'm outside of all of the politics and all the rest of it. And then the checkers that we have, we've had two different checkers, and they're really great guys. And like I said, they're fine with whatever I've decided, as long as I have done due diligence in getting there. They're not going to give me a problem about it. So my wife is far more literal than I am, and so she's pushing me that direction too. So, yeah, so it all works out. I think we balance each other pretty well. And she'll still say, why did you say that twice? I go, I don't know. So I take one out. You know, Bible only says that once. Why do you say it twice? I don't know. So, just like, yes. Yeah, this is actually one of the only things we do pay them for. Normally, we don't pay them for ministry things, obviously. But this is such a hard thing to do. Yeah, we pay them. And we pay them well for by their standards. If I told you what it was, you'd think we were, you know, Nike taking advantage of people. But what do we pay? Do you remember? It's like $7.50 a day. You know, that's big money. I'm serious. That's big money for them. So, yeah, we pay them. And it is really hard. So... And some of them, as I say, some of them, we know now who our best translation helpers are. But you can't just use them all the time. Boy, I wish you could. We have one girl in particular. She's got two kids, so I guess she's a woman. But you recite a passage to her, and she gives it back to you almost verbatim. She's got a phenomenal memory. So you never have the memory hiccups you do with the other people. And so that's really nice. Yes?
Do you consider the church established?
Well, until we have elders ordained, I would say it's not fully established. I'm not there, and nobody else is there now either, so I have no idea what's going on. We'll find out when we get back. But I'm really hoping and praying, seriously, that they're functioning together, that they're doing things, they're carrying on the ministry without us there. But we do need to see elders ordained there before we leave. So... Yes. Yeah, they've been doing that. That's one of the things I do is I do both. I make lessons, I go through the lessons with them, and then they use those lessons and teach. But I also teach just to teach. I'm not giving them those lessons because that's a lot more work for me to do that, and they're asking me to do both. So recently they asked me to teach Revelation. So I started teaching Revelation. I didn't finish it before we left, but and that I'm not giving them the lessons for that, and it that makes it easier for me to get the lessons ready and do that. But at the same time, I'm giving them lessons in, I can't even remember where, 1 Corinthians, I think it was, for them to teach. So, yeah. Okay. Oh.
On the dialects, do they have dialects in their language or just one straight dialect?
Yes. They have dialects in their language. Yeah, there's the downriver dialect is the language is the same, but the pronunciation is very different, kind of like maybe between here and the south, where the words are the same, but they're not pronounced the same. And one of the villages that Bella and I go to it's an accent thing. It's not really a dialect as much as an accent thing, but I have a difficult time understanding them. They have no trouble understanding me, but I have trouble understanding them. Yes? Yes.
What's the training process and who do they get in?
Well, the training process is they've gone with me and our other my other teammates when we had other teammates in for years. And at first they just go and listen, and then they help us with lessons, and then they teach the lessons where we listen. So the training process takes a while. And then they're going to villages that don't live. There are other villages that they're Sagado speaking people. Generally speaking, they're invited to go in. Somebody will ask them, "Will you come and teach us?" So that's, yes. The kids certainly read better. Yeah, the ones that have finished the children's program, some of those kids are, you know, because I. One of the things that we did recently, I went down to that church down the hill, and I saw they use a projector and a computer, and I thought, well, we could do that. So we went out and bought a projector and used my computer, and so we project the verses, and then I have them read them during the service. And it's always a lot better when the kids read them than when the adults do. Kids are, they're sharp. I think we're done. John keeps trying to get up, so.